This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we'll be joined by John Mioli, the Baltimore Banner, to break down the Orioles season thus far. But first, Orioles on the Verge is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. We're going to go to our guest, John Mioli, in just a moment. But first, as we like to do at the top of all of our episodes, we want to welcome a new member of our Patreon community. And with that, I will turn it over to Bob.
Yeah, we got the famous One Finger Willie signed up as a single A patron. We greatly appreciate that. Obviously not a real name, or I don't think so, but that's what they signed up under, so that's what gets shouted out. Appreciate the support. Thanks, One Finger Willie.
And as a reminder, you can sign up for a Patreon community as a paying member for as little as $3 a month and have exclusive access to bonus daily coverage at the $5 and $10 levels. And we just recently released our updated top 50 prospects list for the month of June. So one more reason to check out our Patreon community. I'll bring on tonight's guest. He's our most frequent guest here at Orioles on the Verge. He is a writer for the Baltimore Banner and an author of a new newsletter, Inside the Dugout, from the Banner. He is John Mioli. John, great to have you back on the show.
What's going on, guys?
Glad to have you here. And yeah, let's just start.
We missed you at the live show, but, you know, better late than never.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I leave the country one time, never going to hear the end of it.
Unbelievable.
Well, you're wearing your excuse at the moment right now.
Yeah, I went to see Taylor Swift. When I talked about it when we did the Banner show with Paul Mancano before I was going, somebody commented that they didn't want to hear about 12-year-old girl music, so they were going to stop listening. They came to hear about ball, not 12-year-old girl music. So I'm happy to talk about Taylor Swift with you guys too. I don't want to lose any listeners, but yeah, it was great. And now we're back.
Well, does she play any of her new album since that came out in the middle of the tour?
It was the first show of the new album.
Oh, okay. Okay.
First show in Paris. So, you know, you could tell right away she started dropping songs off the old set list and she had to put something on. So everyone got really excited. The new stuff was great. Just a rocking good time. And, you know, when the tour was going on and last summer and we didn't get tickets, I was like, you know, it's okay. And like having gone now, like I understand that that had a really poor point of view on that. It was not okay. I was really, it would have been something that I was missing out on, and I'm glad I didn't miss out on it.
Yeah. You were down bad, but now you're back.
I'm back. Not down bad anymore.
And you got the Paris out of it. So all in all, I'd say it's a win.
Good city. Good city. There was a day that I ate, like, I think all I ate was sandwiches one of the days, and I felt like fantastic. Like, can you imagine a day that like if here in the good old US of A, if you ate three sandwiches in one day, just how you would feel and like what the ramifications on your body would be. Like, it would be challenging to eat three sandwiches in a day in America and live to tell the tale. In Paris, it was just a thing I didn't feel great about.
Unfortunately, I've done that in America. It's not fun.
Yeah.
So back to our regularly scheduled programming here. John, how would you evaluate the Orioles at this point in the season?
I mean, they're really good. I was thinking about how early it was going to be. I think the only thing I hate more than making like preseason predictions is like people who talk about them. But I think I put them at like 89 wins and like squeaking into the playoffs, and they might make that by like, they might be at that point in, like August at this point. But I thought that, you know, I thought that they were going to be such a much more talented team, and that's clearly the case. I mean, Gunnar Henderson, if you can possibly be better than he was last year, is way better than he was last year. Adley Rutschman is way more productive. Jordan Westberg is taking a huge step forward. Ryan Mountcastle and Anthony Santander are who they are, which is really, you know, productive hitters. Ryan O'Hearn's still that. The pitching staff is phenomenal. This is a really, really good rotation. And I say all this because I thought this team was going to be really high quality and better than they were. And because baseball is baseball, that they would have a lot worse luck than they did last year. And they also have, and they're winning all the same. And it's really, I didn't know. I knew the talent level was going to be a lot higher and they were going to be a lot better. I didn't know that to this point they would be able to overcome, you know, the inevitable bad luck as well as they have. And there's been plenty of it, and it hasn't really shown.
You mentioned Gunnar Henderson playing better than I think even the biggest Gunnar Henderson fans thought he could play this year. He's in the thick of the MVP conversation. Still only early June, but I mean, find me another player in baseball who's as hot as Gunnar right now. And it feels like Adley Rutschman. Okay. This is an Orioles podcast. I'm sorry.
Who's that guy?
The garbage time home run king. And then Adley Rutschman, he's honestly, I feel like Adley Rutschman is just never going to get the credit that he deserves as an offensive catcher, even though he's putting up elite offensive numbers, not even just for a catcher, but just for a baseball player in general. How do you see the rest of the season playing out for these two guys? Is Gunnar Henderson going to be able to keep this pace? Is Adley going to be able to keep this pace? Or is there even another gear for either of these guys?
I think that Gunnar will end up like statistically where he's been. I don't know if he'll be like the 1,000 OPS. I think I saw it was Jacob from the Sun tweeted that like since the Papa John's promotion started, he has like 1,100 OPS. Like, he's not going to be that guy, but I mean, if he hits a leadoff home run every night, he might. But I think he's going to settle. I think that he's going to end up with like a high eights, low 900 OPS. And I think Adley Rutschman's going to end up in the mid eights, just like he always is. And I think there's a distinction that he made there. And it's interesting that you say that. Like Gunnar Henderson, like most of the things he does are spectacular, and it's hard not to treat them as such. And I think a combination of like Adley Rutschman's expectations and just the fact that it's a little more like understated and controlled, although one of these times he's definitely going to fall down as he's hitting one of these home runs, most of the time he's just so like understated and like under control that you don't treat it as great as it is. But it is. I don't know what him getting the proper credit will look like. I mean, when you have these franchise cornerstone catchers, like, they win MVPs and their teams win the World Series. And like everyone kind of, you join that club of like, you are the great catcher of your time. And none of those players that I can recall had Gunnar, like none of those catchers that I'd be thinking about had Gunnar Henderson's also on their roster to take away some of that spotlight, but that's not a bad thing for Adley Rutschman. I think he's somebody who from the moment the Orioles drafted him 5 years ago was a player who was in the business of winning and elevating those around him. And there might be a moment, you know, when he gets home at night where he might want a little more credit, but I'm sure those moments are a lot more muted because the Orioles are winning all the time. And he's probably pretty happy with that.
You wrote a pretty good retrospective recently of that 2019 draft class. Could this class, and that includes Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, could this class ultimately shape the direction of the franchise even more than it already has?
I think so. I mean, there's there are only a handful more places left that the Orioles can go at this point. You know, they won the division and everyone was thrilled with that last year. That was the first full year of these guys. And there seems to be, there's another level to go to. Like, if this group, this draft class, and I'll put Kyle Stowers in that mix too, because he's probably going to be a part of things going forward. Like, if the Orioles win the World Series with Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman, two guys who were taken at the top of the first draft of this front office, like, that is the stuff of dreams. You know, the Astros spawned, you know, before things went bad, they spawned a million, you know, positive stories and books and all, and everyone tried to be them. And the Orioles, you know, quite frankly, could be in that position if they win with this core, and the fact that there are several years left of it. The upside, I think, is limitless. And to answer your question, yes, this draft is already recognized as a great one. To say that there's any ceiling on how great it can be considered, I think sitting here right now isn't a very smart thing to do, because there's a lot of upside in those guys still. As long as they're here and healthy and productive, this team is going to be really good. There's three, four more years of that. And that's probably pretty exciting for Orioles fans to hear.
Switching gears a little bit here. I don't know where Bob went. I think Bob just decided he didn't want to podcast anymore. I think he quit on us.
Is he in Paris now?
I guess. His wife was listening and said, we're going to Paris right now.
Sounded like so much fun. You can eat sandwiches. Let's go.
A more recent, talk about the pitching for a second. You mentioned them with the first question there about how this pitching staff, I feel like as long as you're not on social media and listening or reading some of those comments, this pitching staff is far exceeding expectations, at least in my opinion. And now we've seen Cade Povich just make his debut, and he's going to get another start on Wednesday at home against Atlanta. You've written a lot about Cade Povich and his development over the last year, and really as part of this bigger theme of pitching development in the system. But after looking at just Povich's first start and then what you know about his development, where he's come from, what do you think fans can realistically expect out of him now that he's in the big leagues? We'll see if he stays up, how long he's up, but for now he's up. So what can we realistically expect out of this young lefty?
Yeah, I think that statistically, you know, no one's going to say, like, take an organization's top pitching prospect after that first start and be like, this is what you're going to get. Gave up, what, six runs? And, you know, and it wasn't statistically the best outing. But I think what you saw is a lot of what the Orioles want. He was trying to mix his pitches and throw everything in the strike zone. The fastball was effective up in the zone as it is. There was a lot of weak contact in the zone. When he got into trouble, it was when he wasn't able to locate all of his secondary pitches. He had to come into the zone with a fastball. Did so to Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who has seen a good fastball in the zone before, and he hits it out. And, like, that's what happens when you do that. But Cade Povich, we can go down to Chase McDermott, who Michael Elias even admitted, you know, they're kind of lumped together because of how they were acquired and the track of their careers. Basically, any of these pitchers who are what we would consider like this next wave are operating on the same development model. The Orioles want them to be able to throw as many, quality pitches in the strike zone to good locations as they can, because major league hitters are trained, just like the Orioles hitters are trained, not to chase, not to give in. So the way to get them out is to have really good pitches and locate them in really good spots within the strike zone. The Orioles have a grading system internally where pitchers pitch to specific locations. So if you are a righty and you throw, you know, a good breaking slider, you know, that scores well, like TrackMan wise, it's got the horizontal and the vertical break you want, but it's not in the right place, like, you'll get dinged for that. If you are a righty and you throw that slider to a righty, you know, down and away, the corner of the strike zone where they're going to inevitably swing at it and probably not get good contact, like, you are credited for it. They want these pitchers to be able to throw these pitches in the strike zone. So that's what you saw with Cade Povich. He was really trying to do that. When he was able to do it, there was a lot of weak outs. There were a lot of quick innings. There were some strikeouts mixed in. When he was not able to do that, it was a little more challenging. So I think you saw almost what you'd expect to from him. I was texting with a scout as it was happening. He was like, yeah, this was kind of what, you know, I thought was going to happen. You know, the stuff is good. You have to be really good to throw stuff in the strike zone in the big leagues and get away with it. And that's kind of going to be the next step for him, for all these Orioles pitchers as they start to come up. And I think you guys know we're going to start seeing more and more of them soon, is that you need to be even more fine without trying to be fine, which is kind of tricky, because when guys try to start, you know, placing the ball is when they get into trouble. But you have to be incredibly fine and incredibly convicted in what you're doing to throw pitches to big league hitters in the strike zone. And that's what the Orioles are training these guys to do. So Cade Povich is going to, like you said, get another opportunity. I'm really excited to see how that goes. Atlanta's not swinging the bats as well as they have been in the past recently, but it's going to be a fantastic test for him. And I think that no matter how long he's in the rotation, this is going to be very valuable feedback to get, because he'll go down the AAA with Justin Ramsey and they will be able to hammer whatever it is these big league hitters have found or decided they don't want to swing at or decided that isn't of that quality, and they'll improve it and he'll be better for it.
So just wanted to touch on Justin.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture, and the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Justin Ramsey for a moment, because I know you've written a lot about the way that he helped Grayson Rodriguez after his struggles in the major leagues last year. And although this, we're going to focus more on the minors in our next episode, but how important is he in that final step to getting pitchers ready for the major leagues? And then, like you said, being able to take the feedback from a bad stint and help that pitcher improve?
Well, I think that, you know, and I wouldn't even say it just from a bad stint. When I was talking to him for a story about Cade Povich, you know, I believe probably end of April, early May, as he, you know, he had incredible month, obviously, in April, that put him on the track to be called up and make his debut and be in the position he's in now. And you even get a sense then that all, you know, Justin Ramsey and by extent, you know, the Orioles pitching development program is to focus on what's going to play in the big leagues, no matter what, whether, you know, they want good results, obviously, they want to see that play out at the AAA level in the games that Norfolk is playing. But whether like pitch by pitch, how they're developing stuff, how they're working on stuff, all they're trying to do is replicate the types of pitches and the types of sequences and the types of attack plans that will work in the big leagues. He does an incredibly good job at focusing players on that. You know, there is the personal aspect where he can, you know, get to know these guys and relate to them. He does, you know, he didn't coach everyone at every level of the minors like he did with Grayson Rodriguez, but there's clearly a trust level that's built up, and he's able to, you know, you've seen it over the years with Felix Bautista, Yennier Cano there for a little bit this year. He's got some big projects in terms of like ironing out deliveries and getting command better and other pitchers there. He's got the technical acumen, but to be able to focus these guys specifically on what will play in the big leagues and get them to constantly hammer that, that's something that all the Orioles minor league pitching coaches do. But for Justin Ramsey, who has sent guys up to the big leagues and seen them have success, I think it means a lot more coming from him. And I think he does a really good job at it.
Love it. Big fan of Justin Ramsey. I don't think he gets enough credit. Talking about Allie Rutschman, I get enough credit. I don't think Justin Ramsey gets enough credit for what he brings to this organization. But switching gears here, and let's talk about Cedric Mullins for a second. He had a couple hits the other day on Sunday. He just went 0 for 4. We're recording this Monday night. He just went 0 for 4, even though the Orioles did sweep Tampa Bay. So pretty solid weekend. But ever since that 2021 season, his 30-30 season, it's really been a statistical decline for Mullins. He's now striking out and walking at or near career worst marks. He's got a WRC plus of 55. That was before going 0 for 4 the strikeout tonight. How concerned should fans be about Mullins? Is it time to have that a more serious conversation about Mullins, or is it trust Hyde when he says we're going to keep running him out there and hope that, you know, give him that shot of confidence and he's going to break through this eventually?
Yeah, you know, I'm not you know, I'm not here to tell anyone who is concerned not to be concerned. I mean, this is the big leagues. This is something that, you know, every night there's games and they're on television and they put stats up on the scoreboard and they're permanent and forever. I think there's a little bit of truth to what Adley Rutschman said, I believe yesterday, about, you know, some of the hard hit balls that Cedric Mullins has had. I know that the Orioles hitting coaches are pretty convicted that they're going to, you know, help him work through this. But, you know, I was actually writing about, you know, something about Jorge Mateo getting ready for his return coming up. And it kind of made me just kind of accept, realize, understand, I don't know what the word is, like, do you get a lot of rope when you are able to do other things well? I don't think that's necessarily going to buy Cedric Mullins all the time in the world. But, you know, you said what you mentioned is, you know, WRC plus in the 50s. Like, after April last year, Jorge Mateos was like in the 40s, I believe. It's not, and he was out, yeah, he didn't play every day, but he played a lot. And the Orioles kept him around because they believed in what he could do and believed he added things to the table otherwise. And in an offseason when they knew they had Jackson Holliday and Connor Norby and Kobe Mayo, who could all be on standing on that infield dirt at some point, they still paid Jorge Mateo $2.7 million in arbitration for a role that they didn't even know he would have on the belief that he was going to be better than he was last year. Cedric Mullins, I think, is a different case because he has a track record of succeeding. I believe that other than that All-Star season in his career, every single one of his seasons is basically statistically identical, and not necessarily at All-Star levels. It's not. So there is a track record of success in that year, and there's, you know, there's extenuating circumstances, whether it's injuries, you know, other stuff that we don't know about physically, stuff like that, that make it so that he has not been the player he was. But, you know, Colton Cowser is a really good defender too. You know, if the Orioles decide to, you know, ride this little Austin Hayes wave that's happening and put Colton Cowser in center field or flip that however they want to do it. If they want to get Kyle Stowers more at bats, like, this is a meritocracy. Austin Hayes himself found that out when Colton Cowser started getting hits in Boston and Austin Hayes wasn't hitting at all. That happened very, very quickly. And I think Cedric Mullins, to be fair, saw that. And that might be part of what's going on right now with him performance-wise and what caused him to get out of whack in the way that it did. But I do believe Brandon Hyam when he says they're going to let him play through this. The Orioles are in a really unique position where, like, there's super high stakes given how good they are, but they're also really good. If you want to give Cedric Mullins a start 3-4 times a week to figure this out for the next month, as long as the Orioles are winning, you can do that, and there's not really going to be an impact to it. So it's a, you know, they're high stakes, but it's a unique position for them to be in. And I think that he has already used some amount of the goodwill and good grace that this organization has for him. So I'm interested to see how long that continues.
Couldn't agree more. You know, we always talked about Connor Norby. He's clearly the guy he's never going to have a chance in the Orioles. It's too crowded, too many people above him. He's trade bait. He comes up, and when it was first announced by, I can't remember who broke that news, but, and I thought it was going to be like a Joey Ortiz situation from last year where he doesn't get a real number. It's kind of just like, yeah, he's here because Mateo is on the concussion list. It's going to be brief, no hype video. But no, he got number 12, a real number. He got, you know, the Twitter machine was shouting him out and hyping him up. And it made me think that, hey, maybe, I know it's a stupid reason, but maybe there's a little something to Norby potentially playing his way into staying in Baltimore. And obviously he's still a solid trade chip as well. But what do you think about his debut, and is he going to be here a while, or is he going to be optioned tomorrow when Mateo comes off the injured list?
I'll take the first part first. I'm incredibly happy for him. He's, you know, I think that if we're talking about staying focused on what's going to work in the big leagues and focusing all one's energy on that, to have like 900 plate appearances in AAA and still be finding ways to challenge yourself when you're doing the same types of drills every single day, still finding ways to improve, still finding ways to get more consistent. Like, that is, you know, that's something that's worth, you know, praise and attention. And the fact that he did that is a credit to him and a credit to the Orioles for understanding that. You know, I was thinking at some point, you know, last week about the second part of the question, how long this is going to go. And I was thinking, you know, even if this is like a temporary thing, I have a lot of thoughts on this. One of those thoughts is like, there was a time when like, if the Orioles needed an infielder for a week, it would be like Paul Janish. And like on a basic level, like Connor Norby for a week is better than Paul Janish for a week. Connor Norby for a week is like, yeah, by, you know, I'm not going to make like super value judgment, but I feel very confident saying that. And I feel very confident also saying that, you know, if he is the roster move, whenever Jorge Mateo is back and Ramon Arias deciding that he should probably start hitting, probably helps that, probably strengthens the case for that being what they do. I was also pretty interested to kind of go back and look at how it impacted the value of guys who that happened before, Joey Ortiz, Colton Cowser, to a lesser extent, Kyle Stowers. And like, I was pretty fascinated to see that in other teams' eyes, which, you know, which is to say like teams that use statistical models, like the public facing models didn't ding those players for like being in the big leagues for a couple weeks and only getting a couple hits at all. You know, Kyle Stowers, Joey Ortiz, Colton Cowser, those guys I mentioned there, 2023 like big league projections through these models were basically the same as their 2024 ones when there wasn't a lot of big league success to speak of for any of them. So I thought, you know, and I asked around, I asked some people around the game if that was just like three people's examples or if that was kind of what happened. And I came away with it feeling pretty strongly that like that's kind of just how models view it. Scouts don't really, especially with the Orioles, scouts aren't going to be like, oh, I don't want this guy. He was only in the big leagues for 2 weeks and he didn't really hit. Like, they have eyes. They see how good these players are and they see the players that are playing instead of them, and it's not a ding on them. So if it ends up being Connor Norby, you know, going back to Norfolk, he's going to be going back with, you know, with a whole ream of information as to how he can get better for the next time. And he's somebody who has known how to work with that in a hypothetical sense at AAA. So I wouldn't be surprised if he benefits from whatever experience he gets, even if it's, you know, a short amount of it.
Looking at someone on a completely different end of the spectrum, one of the Orioles veterans, Craig Kimbrel, you've taken a pretty nuanced view of Kimbrel in your coverage of him. And you've pointed out that for all of the ups and downs, it seems like we should reasonably expect him to perform at his career norms, or at least his career norms for the last 5 or 6 years or so. With that in mind, what priorities do you think the Orioles should have in upgrading their bullpen as we approach the trade deadline?
First of all, thank you for appreciating said nuanced approach. You know, I just don't think there's a lot of like value in like chicken littling like a closer every time something goes badly. Like, I understand that I understand the Craig Kimbrel experience. You know, there are a lot of fan bases that understand it. Some of them ended in World Series and some of them ended before that. Both of those people can thank Craig Kimbrel for that. So like, I get it. But I think that he is, you know, he is exactly what the Orioles paid for and exactly what they expected. And I anticipate that to be the case. That said, and it's such a strange conversation, you know, like as a group, the bullpen is like middle of the pack statistically in a lot of ways. And like, and I think that like, the last dozen games, like they've given up like a handful of runs, like more inherited runners, but like a handful of runs. They're pitching really, really well. So there's definitely a concern of how much these guys are being used. And there's definitely a concern of what the plan Bs are and plan Cs are. So I think that if the Orioles have the opportunity to add that missing quality, that's what I would do. That's very vague for a reason. I'm not saying, you know, go out and get a lefty specialist, go out and get this or that. I think if you can get somebody who can kind of do, I guess what, like, I don't want to say Felix Bautista because was incredible and he was the closer, but like he was also, before he was the closer, he was used in a lot of spots where you needed strikeouts. He was used in those kinds of jams, and the Orioles have some relievers who could do that. And they have some relievers who are more, you know, trust the stuff in the zone, like put the ball in play types. And that is a little, you know, round bat, round ball, like anything could happen when you're doing that. So I think the Orioles would probably be looking for some kind of bat missing consistency. What team isn't? And also what team, you know, would want to trade that if they have it. So I would venture to say they're going to be looking at that pretty closely. I would also, you know, I would also note that that kind of quality is going to be expensive, and the Orioles are a team that has a pretty strict value structure, and expensive isn't usually something that they do. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
That kind of leads into this next question here, in that, do you think the Orioles, by the trade deadline, do you think, obviously trades are complicated, they're nuanced, do you think the Orioles will make a big splash? I don't know, a frontline start, another Jesus Luzardo type stuff, not even a frontline starter, but a big name starting pitcher, or some sort of big splash by the trade deadline? Or I know you wrote about the group of guys who were at Bowie at the time. Some of those guys have been promoted to Norfolk now, but the Orioles also have a lot of Rule 5 eligible guys who are healthy now. Some of them pitch you better than others, but a lot of roster decisions to be made by the end of the year. Do you think we probably see more of those types of guys from that Brandon Young, Kyle Branovich group, where the Orioles kind of use that group to maybe shore up the fringes of the roster at the trade deadline?
You know, I think there's probably going to be a blend of the two. You know, when you just take into account like everyone who's Rule 5 eligible, some guys who might be considered like quote unquote blocked on the 40 and like off of it, like you have the whole, like most of the farm system at that point, but you know, you have enough to get high quality arms. I think there is, you know, kind of like a use them or lose them type view with some of those pitchers who could get popped in the Rule 5. I also think that you know, we're talking about a team that also, like, you know, we could put like Easton Lucas in that category last year, and there was a world where we would have thought that he would have been someone who, like, if the Orioles needed to, they could have called him up, and like they traded him, and like we could say whether that worked out or not, but I don't believe that Easton Lucas has pitched like somebody who would have helped the Orioles at the big league level since that trade. He's on, I believe he's with Detroit now, so like, so there's a lot of things that can happen in between now and then. And I guess that's all to say that the Orioles have and continue to have and will probably for the foreseeable future have all the talent in the world to make a big splash if they want to. But they also have a front office that will not make a big splash if they feel like it's going to be a big mistake. And that's, especially when we're talking about like trading for relievers, trading for, you know, pitching in general, it's so volatile. You know, there were trades they could have made last year that would have been really, really impactful to the farm system for players that ended up getting hurt down the stretch and like would have been really challenging. They're probably really glad they didn't make those. They're probably also, you know, we know Michael Elias said himself, he wanted to, you know, he wished that the trades they made had more of an impact in October. So they're going to, I would assume, do things that make an impact in October, but I am not going to, until like we see it happen, like think that they're going to make a trade that like will make a significant impact on the farm system or the future value. I think they could do like a rental starter. They could probably do a couple rental starters for like reasonable prices, to the extent there are reasonable prices at the trade deadline, but it's really hard for me to sit here and think that even as good as the Orioles are and as high as the upside of this team is, and however much a big trade could get them over the hump in October, it's just really hard for me to sit here and say that, like, I definitely think they're going to do that.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this a lot.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Actually, and before the Corbin Burns trade in the offseason, I felt like there was always, fans wanted that trade. We heard the Dylan Cease, we heard all those big names in the offseason that were available. And I think when we talked about it, I feel like we kind of always assumed if the Orioles were going to make a trade, it was going to be for a younger guy with multiple years of control, someone who maybe you could unlock a little bit more from. Because I feel like Mike Elias, I'm going to take a wild guess and say he's pretty proud of this player development staff and the scouting and player development. And he's proud of this farm system that's built not just to win a World Series in 2024, 2025, but keep fresh blood coming into this organization, whether it's by trade or having the cream of the crop rise to the top in the major leagues. But with that trade, I feel like the Corbin Burns trade, though, and I hate saying all they gave up was Joey Ortiz or Dee Hall. Joey Ortiz is looking like an all-star now with Milwaukee. He's the guy that we assumed he would become in the major leagues. But do you almost feel like the Orioles would maybe prioritize more Corbin Burns type trades, the 1 year rentals, over those guys with multiple years of control because the price is lower and with the volatility of pitchers, especially in today's game?
It's really fascinating. Like that trade, Corbin Burns is awesome. He's so good. And the fact that he's pitching for the Orioles this year is a huge reason why. I think they're where they are, and I've said in a couple of venues, like, I went around to all the starting pitchers I could find in the clubhouse after opening day and was just like, what do you think of that? And they were all just like, that was awesome. And like, I can't wait to do that myself. He has elevated this team in so many ways. But like, he will realistically be here for 1 year. He has 4 months left in an Orioles uniform, 5 months, depend. I don't know when the World Series ends. He will be in an Orioles uniform until the season ends, and he will be heartily thanked for his services by every single person who watches this team, every single person who works for this team, especially. And then he will go sign a contract worth nine figures, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and he will deserve every penny of it in the market. And Joey Ortiz will be, you know, maybe be an all-star and maybe not be an all-star. Maybe he will be on an all-star trajectory and he will be on the Brewers for 5 years. D.L. Hall will be on the Brewers for five more years. Whoever the Brewers draft will be on the Brewers. Maybe by the time, I don't know, my kid might be in college. Person still could be on the Brewers. Who even knows? So like both of those things are like the, both of those things are, I think, are reality. The Orioles are balancing. Like, they made a trade for a really good player. They gave up, like, what they gave up hurt, and also realistically was not something that they were going to be able to use in the near term. I don't know if they're going to be in that business to do that often, to do that again, but I think that as different the competitive circumstances are, as different as the ownership circumstances are, Michael Elias said it himself after that trade, which was right after the sale was announced, which I do believe was a coincidence, but a very happy coincidence. He said that, you know, they still believe in what they believe in. They still believe in a healthy organization. They still believe in developing players. It's just that sometimes you have to move the sliders a little bit if you have a playoff division team, a division winning team, and you need to weight that a little closer to like the present day, 2024. I think that we might know what the closest, like, we might know where the ends of those adjusters and those sliding scales are with the Corbin Burns trade, which is to say they could do it again. But I think I would just caution to say that, I guess that, you know, that they realize what they did is a really good trade, and they also realize what they gave up, and they did both of those things with open eyes. They knew they were getting a real good player, and I think they knew they were giving up really good players. So to the extent they want to be in that business often or going forward, I don't know. But I think that it's a valuable perspective to share as we're kind of thinking about whether this is going to keep happening.
Nice. And can we also point out this tweet from Andy Koska, who says, Corbin Burns said he still has room to improve despite a 2.08 ERA and 9 quality starts. So yeah, he's a really good pitcher to say the least.
Yeah. You can't do any better than that for like a 1 year rental. Like, this has worked out fantastically so far.
Absolutely. And you know, the depth that Elias and company have built in his team, I feel like helps offset some struggles. Like Mullins has been struggling, Arias, Hayes, they struggled, but they had the depth to kind of sub in guys out and kind of negate that a little bit, which goes into this next question, which is, good or bad, which player's performance to this point in the season seems the least likely to sustain itself, whether that is a Mullins who's struggling or if it is a Ryan O'Hearn, Jordan Westberg. Maybe they're playing a little over their heads. What do you think?
Least likely to sustain. I think that we're on track for like the Cedric, or sorry, the Austin Hayes season that, you know, we would want after a poor start, you know, an understandably inexplainable poor start. I mean, Cedric Mullins will improve. I think my answer is like Jorge Mateo. Like, this has basically been, you know, we are at the limit of like how long his good stretches have been in the past. You know, he had like 6 weeks in 2022. He had April last year. Every, you know, when he comes back from this concussion, if he's the same player that he was, you know, every, I should also add like 2021 after he was waiver claim, he was pretty much the kind of play offensive player he is now. Like, but like, there was a shelf life to all of those. And for him to be able to continue to be like the every, like the regular player that he's been, I think that, you know, he needs to keep doing that. He hasn't in his Orioles career shown to be that kind of player for this long. And when he's not like a really good offensive player, he's the opposite of that. So I think there's, you know, I'm monitoring that to say the least, but I think it's also worth acknowledging that he has been, you know, one of the best versions of himself. I was digging into a little today. He is hitting fastballs a lot better. He's whiffing at breaking, like right breaking balls less often than he has in the past. And when you do that, you're a much better hitter. So I think, you know, those are real things that explain why he's been doing well. I wonder, and I think the Orioles are probably wondering too, like if this is going to be what he is now. He's 29. We'll see.
We'll go now with this question from Colin in our Discord, who wants to know, given some of the things we've seen in the last year or so, I actually don't have this person's name from Discord, but given the change in the ownership and some of the strides the Orioles are making, we saw the addition of the T. Rowe Price jersey pass, a corporate partnership that's attached to that. Do you think that the chances have increased in the last few months that we're going to see a big extension of some type for an existing player?
Yeah, I do. I do, because I think the chances were very close to zero. You know, if we had this conversation this time last year, I don't remember. I think it was like in August that John Angelos told the New York Times that, you know, he'd have to go passing the hat around and like shut the business down or ask, you know, I don't remember what he said, but it wasn't that I'm going to sign Adley Rutschman or Gunnar Henderson to a contract extension. I'll tell you that much. So I think that the chances are absolutely higher. I think the Orioles have a ton of candidates who deserve it, who warrant it. All the reasons why they might not do that, player and team, are pretty well documented. You know, Scott Boras is probably watching Gunnar Henderson have an MVP caliber season at his age and thinking about a lot of winter meetings puns about how great Gunnar Henderson is and trying to drive out the market. I think that Adley Rutschman is a really good player, and I think that he is demonstrating that he's worth a ton to the Orioles, and the Orioles also probably recognize that he's a catcher and he's caught a lot and it's challenging to age as a catcher. I also think that if you go through the list of massive contract extensions, free agent contracts, massive financial outlays in baseball, you will find a lot of them who that might not have had like front office support or front office like motivation, but had ownership support or ownership motivation. And that's a real possibility at this point. You know, David Rubenstein seems like he's really enjoyed being the Orioles owner. He seems like he's having a lot of fun doing it. He's doing a lot of cool stuff. He is, you know, they are doing things on and off the field that they haven't done. They're opening up new revenue streams. And also, every time he does any of the fun things that he does, his mentions and all the replies on social media are, okay, now please extend Adley and Gunnar. So, like, to keep the good vibes going other than winning, like, that is a thing that would do that. I'm not saying he will do it to, like, you know, score online cred. I'm just saying that, like, owners typically are the ones that drive those decisions, and he has much more incentive, financial wherewithal, desire, whatever you want to call it, to extend any of these players than John Angelos did. So to answer the question, yes, I think the odds have increased significantly.
And with that, that does it for the first part of our appearance with John. He'll be back with us later this week to look at all things minor leagues. Before we wrap up, though, John, I just want to give you a chance to plug your newsletter, your coverage of the Banner, and the coverage, really, as a whole, of the excellent team of Orioles writers that you have there.
Yeah, awesome. So we're about a month in now to Inside the Dugout, it's the Banner's first subscriber-only newsletter. So anyone who subscribes to the Banner can sign up for that and have that included in their subscription. It's funny, I had a newsletter for like 16 months and it wasn't actually a newsletter. It was just how, you know, my ramblings were delivered. Now it's actually now I actually have a newsletter. I'm trying to explore the same types of things and hit on the same types of topics that I do in the regular Banner coverage, just in a little bit of a different format. It's been really well received. I encourage anyone who subscribes to the Banner to sign up for that. I think there's a significant, you know, I think there's a significant case to subscribe to the Banner as it is. And I think that if you want to subscribe to the Baltimore Banner to just get this newsletter, you will also not regret it. Andy Koska and Danielle Allen Tuck and Kyle Goon and Paul Mancano on the socials, everyone involved in the Orioles is doing an incredible job, have been since they Banner launched their sports coverage last year. I think that overall, like, coverage of this team is really good. And I think that the Banner has a lot to do with that. I really love working with all those people. And I encourage everyone who's not signed up to do so.
I agree. I think the Orioles fans are lucky with just, in general, the people that cover the team. But it's a real who's who over at the Banner. And definitely, if you're going to look at one place for your Orioles stuff, that is the place to go.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
That does it for this episode. We'll be back later this week with John to talk about the minor leagues. We're going to focus on the pitching development progress that the Orioles have had, as well as some of the bigger names offensively in the farm system. You're not going to want to miss that. But in the meantime, you can check us out on our many social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also at Substack, OriolesOnTheVerge.substack.com. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, you can sign up for our Patreon community to have exclusive access to bonus daily coverage, monthly top 50 updates, and a whole lot more. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, presented by Bet Online and part of the Believe Podcast Network.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.